League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
D. Watkins with Salon TV. Today I'm joined by Academy Award winning actress Melissa Leo, star of many celebrated films including The Fighter, The Equalizer 1 and 2, Flight, and Prisoners, to name a few. But today we'll be discussing her new film, Unlovable, which is available in theaters, VOD, and digital right now. In Unlovable, Leo plays Maddie, a recovering sex and love addict who's a reluctant sponsor to Joy, a young woman who's dealing with addiction. Very, very great film. I enjoyed it a lot. It's funny and depressing at times, but which is good.
It's all of that for
great art. So, tell us about Maddie.
Well, I could tell you about Maddie, but really the film is about Joy, who is the young woman who actually wrote the script, played by the woman who wrote the script, who is also a self-confessed recovering. Love and sex addict. Mm-hmm. And she had first gone online in some way, I'll say a blog, but I don't know if that's what she was doing, something online, that she got an enormous amount of followers by her honesty mm-hmm. about her difficulty. And then she wrote a script, and Mark Duplass got a hold of it, and my very dear friend and wonderful working comrade, Susie Unisi, was chosen as the director to direct the film. And so she had invited me into the story. And Maddie is someone that Joy meets along the way in a 12-step program. And, you know, one would think that, you know, I think the perception from the outside of such a thing is that, well, at some point you recover and now you're all better. And right. And that's not really what the experience of the recovering addict of anything is, that the addiction still plagues and it's a matter of relearning your life choices. And that's basically, although I made it sound quite dull, and it's not dull, that's basically what you see. You see Charlene's character, Joy, spiraling out of control, sort of, you think it's the worst at the beginning, but mm-hmm. it gets worse yet. The filmmaker does not show you these awful encounters she's having, but you definitely get the flavor of it. Without exploiting anyone. And so it's more palpable in a way. And then finally, Char's character, Joy, decides this is enough is enough, and she seeks some help and finds me, who's quite reluctant to help her because of a past history that you eventually find out in the film.
Yeah, we're taught that dealing with addiction is a destination, but it is more like a journey. Mm. It's you have these strides where, you know, we would see Joy making progress, and then she would hit a wall. Mm. And I think even those elements will help people who suffer from addiction, because, you know, all of us have our things and that mm-hmm. we try to work mm-hmm. on. I like that it was very colorful. I guess mm. Joy was very colorful as a person. And like as a character with like
this is why it's such a great marriage with the screenwriter and the director, really a really good union. Susie Unisi has a particular light, delightful, light, girlish, I could even say, mm-hmm. aesthetic. And at the same time, she's probably one of the deepest, brightest people I've ever met. And so that combination of both her sort of lighthearted, you know, little cute hearts and things mm-hmm. kind of way about her, also this depth of seriousness which she does her work, she's really a well chosen to be the person to, because the film couldn't be it's not as important a film as it turns out if you're gonna like show all the sex and be tawdry about it. And I think that, you know, everyone can get a pretty good idea of what right. this young woman has been up to without having seen it. And then so much of the film is this arduous slow march toward recovery
right.
and the propensity that we all have to sort of backslide on our own selves and do things that aren't making us happy, aren't keeping us healthy, and still a compunction to do that. And as you're talking about, it really can be not only, you know, a sort of teaching tool about love and sex addiction, but also about any kind of addictive behaviors.
Yeah, I was thinking about like your perspective, like viewing it on a page, and the film is so joy focused. So what we learn about Maddie, we learn in subtle ways, like her mom's drinking problem, her dad not being there, but we don't, you know, it's not in your face like joy story. So as an actress, when you're looking at that on a page, how do you prep for a role like that to be effective? And
well, it's a very poignant question for this particular film. I'm very, very proud to be a part of the film. I'm not as proud as I'd like to be of my own performance in it. And a part of that is because there were hints about Maddie's history, the relationship with her brother. There was definitely some kind of problem there. What was the problem exactly? Well, while we were shooting the film, I was just completing a long first season of a television show. And so I eagerly agreed to work again with Susie Unisi, and then got to really break down the script and go, oh gosh, there's so many questions that are unanswered. I think in the larger picture, it helps tell the story because it focuses the story so much more on the main character, Joy. But I think that, you know, the idea was that Maddie had come through some hard times of her own, and that those, in fact, are the only people who can help people who are having a hard time is people who have known a hard time themselves.
Right.
So that piece of it is definitely there, and it is my job as an actor to fill in those blanks.
Yeah, I mean, as a viewer, I was satisfied.
Oh, like, good. I'm
glad. As a viewer, I mean, obviously, I'm not an expert. Haven't, you know. Don't know a fraction
expert,
of the
industry. Expert of a viewer. That's
I'm an expert viewer.
I'm an expert viewer.
So like I felt satisfied. Like I didn't leave the film wondering like, you know, what was this issue or was that issue. That's why I was kind of wondering like you know, if I was to have to take a project like that on, like what would I focus on contributing so that viewers can feel satisfied?
Well, I had to ask a lot of questions, and as you asked me the question, I now remember also that there's a moment in which Maddie sort of shares her history in the 12-step group, and what was written on the page I found very hard to get out of my mouth. Now remember that it's Charlene that wrote this script, and she's, well, about half my age, so how does a woman so young write a... And I did actually, not so much sharing from my own life, but sharing from an idea I had about who Maddie was with this wonderful brother of John Hawks, and put together what a monologue that I felt would help tell that story. And yeah, in answer to your question, I think that there's a certain amount of experience I have as an actor to understand, like sometimes an actor can come with an idea that's like, oh, and I could wear a funny hat, and then that wouldn't help the story at all.
Right.
That'd make you like a person in a funny hat,
but
that doesn't help tell the story. So as an actor, I'm always looking for what is both on the page and not yet on the page that's going to help the filmmaker tell the story we're telling.
So do you have more fun working on some films than other films, or is it always like you get into a character and it's that character and then, you know, it's on to the next?
Yeah, I mean, the character that I'm playing is going to inform what my experience is a lot, because I do go pretty deeply into who that character is. I will often find myself talking with a filmmaker and saying, you know, I can have this nice, calm conversation with you right now, but when we're shooting this scene, I'm not going to be able to talk to you in this way. I'm going to be far more demanding or more reticent or whatever it is, the character that's been given to me to play. I had played a character in a film we shot in India And there was just so much dark evilness about her. And I kept on begging the filmmaker, can't we make her a little less dark and evil? Can't she just be, you know, more interesting than that? And, oh, yeah, that'll be a great idea. That'll be a great. And we got there. And then he wanted this dark, angry. Right. And I am settling in for a shot that's been changed four or five times. And then and I'm like, say to the director or something. And he's like, oh, so much negativity. And I'm like, well, that's what you've been, what you want in your, there'd be a better way to do it, but you told me you don't want to do that.
But of course, with your resume, you get a chance to change some things. You get
it depends on who you're working with. It depends on who you're working with and how receptive. For example, Antoine Fuqua, he wanted me to get involved in the Equalizer 2 in the fight that the character's involved in. You know, the fight team, they were, you know, top notch and perfectly happy to work it out with the stunt double and one thing and another. But I know Fuqua a little better than that, and I know that he and the writer of the Equalizer series wanted me to get involved. And so there am I, who've done a very limited amount of fight work in my career, telling these fight directors, no, it's got to be like this, and we got to do it this way. And so, and then there's other people that, you know, want David Simon, for example, he wants you to say the words that are on the page, any other words, just the words that are on the page. And so it depends on who you're working with.
Yeah, I guess I get that with Simon, because Baltimore is such a unique place with like its own language and accent. And, you know, he's always really like addicted to making sure people stay on track with that. But I think you have amazing range. And, you know, I say this because I've already appreciated your work before this assignment, but also because when I watch Flight and when I watch Equalizer and when I watch The Fighter, I see three different people. So what is your process like when you go on to create these? Because you didn't have to create The Fighter, of course. You had a person to draw
from.
That
was amazing. That's an unparalleled experience, to actually sit in a room and breathe the air with
the person
you're
going to
be. It's not easier. It's just totally different. This thing I'm talking about how do you find what's in between the words? How do you fill that out to make a whole person? Playing Alice Ward, I just had so much information. We were shooting in the town that all that occurred in Lowell, Massachusetts, with her family and herself all around us all the time. Extraordinary, extraordinary experience that. Then, in the other things, in both in Flight and in Equalizer, I'm there with a very different character I'm being asked to play in Flight and in Equalizer, opposite the same actor. And there's an actor who just shows up as the character, and to be the
seems like it's more pressure. It's more pressure when you have to look a person in the eye and you know you can't let them down, and you got this whole city.
Every actor should be so lucky as to work opposite Denzel Washington. He just gives you the truth right away, you know. So that all helps, you know. Like if you have other people there that are willing to believe the game. And in Fighter and Lowell, I'd come out with my hair all done up and my costume on.
You ever go back to that hairstyle?
No, that's a lot of work.
It's like a lot of spray.
It's not something I could have done on my own. Yeah, no, that's Alice hair.
So I saw you, and then I saw like a number of other actors talk about the term method actor, how people get it wrong. Could you just give us like a class on what that is and explain it to us? So we'll
briefly, in my understanding, right? Because I am not a highly educated person. I just sort of pick things up, and if my gut grabs onto it, then I get something. But by my understanding, there was a group of people who were called The Group, and that was the theater that they had been involved in, and they, as a group, traveled to Russia, unprecedented, and studied with the great acting teacher Stanislavski. I wasn't there, but I have a pretty good guess that as soon as that small group of Americans got on the flight back home from Russia, they began to argue. That's not what he said. No, he said that, but what he meant was, and remember, they're listening to something that's being translated from Russian to, so there's a lot of room for different interpretations. So after that famous visit to the Stanislavski, the group fell apart and developed all these different forms of acting, each right. one saying, this is it, no, this is it. And you know what it is when you get anything that's being too didactic and saying only this and never that, there's a problem. So for me, method acting is that one would have a method. Sometimes you need to use tools as an actor. Sometimes you just learn the words and you're opposite Denzel Washington and it feels real and mm-hmm. it is real and you just do it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're opposite, you know, a street casting hire that is there and you have to work double extra hard to sort of do the scene for them and for you. There's all kinds of that in my experience of working. I've been so lucky to have so many levels of working, so many different kinds of people to work with, that I have come to believe that method acting is having those tools, having some kind of a method that may not be the same in every job for every character,
right.
but one can always learn about acting.
When the director yells cut, then you just go home and go back to being yourself, or do you carry a piece of that character?
I think that that's a part of what it is. It's the thing that makes it be method acting in this country, and oh, she's a method actor.
Right.
That there's some notion that when I'm in that character, suddenly I'm blind, deaf, and dumb. You did come for a visit. I'm almost done, but not yet. I know, blah, 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 blah. You heard it all before. But, you know, he just is such a scene stealer, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. He's the best.
But you, there's not one way and not another.
I mean, even like as a writer, I read tons of books and articles and I take a piece of those with me as I continue
right.
my journey as well. So
right.
I don't see why anyone would look at it differently.
Right, and the day comes when you're like, oh my gosh, you gotta do this kind of interview with somebody and now you have to come up with a new tool. And that is really exciting as an actor when you get challenged to up your game even more.
So you grew up in New York and you acted your early career, you spent some time acting here. What do you think of the changes? Are you into this new New York?
No, I think even, I don't know, maybe it's just generational, I'll eventually sort of go. But I grew up in a New York that was such a true melting pot by mm-hmm. 1960 when I was born. And it didn't feel like there were all these lines between white people and black people. And it was just, we were just people downtown.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been downtown people and uptown people. but in the theater even, you know, interracial casting was, everybody was mm-hmm. doing that without making a lot of fuss about it. And then 15 years, 20 years into my career, you began to see every character that wasn't white labeled with some ethnicity that then made you go, oh, so all the other characters have to be white. And it just feels like the world's getting more and more divided. And,
right.
and New York is not, it's not the New York that I grew up in. It's very, mm-hmm. very hard to find home.
Any hope in getting that New York back?
I don't think as a species we go back. Unfortunately, I just don't, I mean, and maybe fortunately on other hand, but I don't think that, you know, once we have technology, we can't take away technology now. That I would love that if we could just go back to simpler times, but that just isn't how people work.
Well, I think you and Charlene de Guzman took a great step forward in dealing with the issue of sex addiction and love addiction and making it less taboo so more people can connect and hopefully share their stories.
Super
as well.
Important to
so
talk about.
Tell everyone, look right into the camera, okay. And tell everyone where they can see Unlovable.
Well, Unlovable is available to you right this very second because it's video on demand, digital, available right now. It's also, if you want to go see a motion picture in the movie theater, it's also available in theaters right now. Go right. see it.
Go see it. There you heard it from Academy Award winning actress Melissa Leo. Thank you. Have a great day.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.